Bring strength and hope with us. Each week we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of December 24, 2000. He has continually been in service in H&I and as business chairman, as well as a sponsor. And I asked him if he had a favorite AA motto, and he didn't. He liked them all. So, with having said that, may I have the envelope, please? The moment we've all been waiting for. One day I'm going to get dressed up in an evening gown and come into the room. The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week Award is Lloyd S. from Fresno.
I'd like to thank God. My sobriety date is 12/24/2000. That's when God came between me and alcohol for the last time, his divine intervention. I thought it was due to the cops and everybody else, but the judges and stuff, but it wasn't. My name is Lloyd Stringer, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Thanks. That was really nice seeing all those people come up here. I can relate to my first time when I had to do that, and I didn't want to do it, and I was kind of full of fear, you know, suffering from untreated alcoholism. I announced myself as a recovered alcoholic today. When I first came in for the first 3 years, I couldn't do that. I didn't think you could be recovered, you know, but the book points out, as I was taken through the book, that I'm to announce myself as a recovered alcoholic, so that the suffering alcoholic can hear me and know that there is somebody that's standing in front of them that has gone through the book and has worked the steps and can offer a solution to them. So I announce myself as a recovered alcoholic, and there's a lot of slack I get sometimes. People tell me you can't be recovered. But time and time again throughout the book, it says we can't be recovered. In the title page of the big book, it's the first promise that we can be recovered. It does say we can't be cured. And I do believe that I will always have alcoholism, and the only thing that stands between me and alcoholism is God. He's my only defense. There's no mental defense. There's no, I can't rely on people in my group. I can't rely on anything but God to do that for me. And that was a hard thing for me to accept. For the first 2 or 3 years, well, let me back up. When I first came into AA, I got the AA through the court system. I was getting my card signed because, I was going in and out, and the last time I got locked up, I spent like 3 months in county, and I was looking at 3 years in Wasco. I had a DUI, and I had other charges, and the court system, they were finally tired, and the officer said, just leave him in there until he goes to court this time. And I figured, well, I'm going to do a big stretch here. I got so much family in prison that I'll deal with it. The only fear I had was that once I got in there, I thought, you know, instead of doing 3 years, I'll probably wind up doing life because I'll probably wind up killing somebody. And I'm not saying that trying to be like, but I just know with my family and things that happen, what goes on in the system, you know, I'd be lucky to get out. I thought minimum 3 years, I'd get out 7 years if I'm lucky with what goes on, the way things run. But God intervened, and besides getting me locked up that night, they came out with Prop 36 that year, and they put me into a PCDC program, and they told me, public defender told me, just go to the meeting and just get your card signed and lie. Just tell them you're there to listen, do anything but talk, don't get involved, just tell them all you need is a card signed and you're just there to listen. So I did that, you know, when I got out. But prior to getting out, when I was locked up that 3 months, there was a couple of guys in the dorm, there was like 60 of us in that room, and one of the guys was going to meetings, and I didn't know he was going to meetings, and he kind of said, you know, maybe you ought to check out going to those meetings, you know, and he also, my first night in there, I started getting their shakes, and he gave me those fiery Red Balls to try and give me some sugar to help me out, you know, and I thought, well, that's grand of you, nice guy there. Like the third week, when we were like the third or fourth day in, I remember seeing this guy. There was nothing to do, so I used to find all the books I could to read, and this guy had this, you know, the little blue books. He had the little blue book, and I was like, hey, what's that? And he goes, it's a big book. And I was like, well, you don't have to be a smartass. I was just asking what the book is. And then he goes, no, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go, oh, okay. And I kind of started backing up, and I go, so, you know, you got a problem or what? And he goes, yeah. He goes, you know, I'm doing my inventory. And I go, inventory? And he goes, yeah. He goes, you know, I'm writing out my four step, doing my inventory. And I thought, okay. You know, and I backed away from him as quick as I could. But then when the other guy told me I might try that meeting out because I talked to a few people, I thought, okay, at least it'll get me out of here and into a different room, you know. So I went in there, and I heard some guys for the first time talking about their problem, and I could relate with their problem. I could relate with the unmanageability. I could relate with the chaos that was going on in their life. One thing I didn't hear was solution. But that's all I could relate with. And I thought, well, hey, that's great. I can relate with these guys. Maybe this is something I can, maybe I'll come back to the next one. I came back two more times, and then they finally kicked me out. And I started going to the meetings. And I went to my second meeting. And my second meeting, I saw this guy there. And I used to drink with, I used to work the sawmills. I used to do the logging up in the mountains and in the Sierras. And I saw this guy, and I thought, holy crap, I go, what are you doing here? And he goes, oh, I've been sober like 8 years now. And I was like, are you kidding me? I thought, dude, if you can do it, maybe there's a chance I can do it. You know, and he was like, yeah, just, you know, keep going to meetings. And I was like, okay. So I want to say this because I feel it's an important part of my experience. And what I'm sharing tonight is my experience, and I'm not trying to step on toes, and I'm not trying to make anybody feel ill, and I hope I don't chase anybody out of the rooms or cause ill feelings, but my experience with AA was different than what it is now in the beginning. You know, I came through a treatment program, and the treatment program taught me a lot of things, or they were trying to instill a lot of things on me, and they taught me things like that if you could do it for the first 5 minutes, maybe you can get a half hour, and if you can do it for a half hour, then you can get an hour. And if you can do it for an hour, maybe before you know it, you can have a day in you. And I thought, okay. So, and I went and started going to the meetings, and I was pulling that off, and I thought, well, so far I've got like 90 days behind me, because I did that while I was locked up, you know. And so when the third meeting I went to, they gave me a chip, and I thought, this is cool, you know, all right, you know. But I didn't share, I didn't talk, I just thought they're giving me something, because I was glad when anybody gave me anything, because I was a taker. So what happened was I sat in the room for about 7 months, and I just listened, and I said, I'm just here to listen, you know. And I remember one guy wouldn't sign my card, and I got into an argument with him, and I was like, you know, don't you guys have a file tape back there with all these things in it, you know. And I mean, I really got in an argument, and I thought, we're going to fight. And since then, I've seen a lot of things like that happen today. But he wouldn't sign it. And that's when it dawned on me, I don't need these guys to sign my card, I can sign my own card, you know. But I was going to court every Friday. I was doing 4 treatment center meetings a week, plus I had to go to 3 meetings on top of that with AA. And after being out like 2 or 3 months, I thought, man, they got me jumping through hoops. I'm doing these meetings, I'm going to court on Friday, I'm having to fill a cup up for the county, and I'm having to pay for it, you know. And you know what? I'd rather go and do my time. Maybe if I'm lucky, maybe I'll get out like in a year or so. At least they won't have control over me, and I can be free. And somebody told me, what kind of thinking is that? You know, and I was like, well, at least they won't, you know, they're running my life right now. And he goes, well, they'll be running your life when you're in there. And I thought, well, I guess you're right. You know, man, it didn't hit me that way. I mean, I was so wrapped up in self. So, somebody said, you need to get a sponsor. I didn't know what a sponsor was. The only time I've heard sponsors was like for soccer games, baseball and stuff. And I thought, oh, somebody's going to fund me and support me. That's cool. And then they said, no, there's somebody who takes you through the book. And I said, okay. So I got a sponsor, and he worked my first 3 steps with me through my center. And then he took me through the rest of the steps. And I love that man to death. He's my first sponsor, and I'm not trying to discredit him. He showed me the way that was shown to him. Just like today, I showed the people that were shown, the way that I was shown as I was taking through the book. But we didn't really crack that book at all. We didn't go through the book. And we went through the way that he did it. He lined things out. And the first 3 was kind of like what I hear a lot in AA. Do you believe you're powerless? Yeah. If you came into AA, you know, you turn your life over to God. You know, I mean, you did steps 1, 2, and 3 when you first came in. That's pretty much how I did mine. And I did my 4 step. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know about that. And he broke it out and showed me, and it was like the Dill and Charlie checklist. I listed my resentments, and then I put yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. That's it. Yep. Okay, oh, cool, I'm done, you know. And then I did my sex inventory, because list the women. I did that. And then, you know, it came back and said, well, you don't have to make amends to this one, this one, this one, this one, or this one. And I was like, man, this is really cool, you know. What happened was, a year later, these people that I didn't make the amends to, these women and the other people, they're still eating away at me on the inside, eating away at me. And I did, I got involved in H&I because I was told, you need to get more involved in AA. You need to start secretary meetings, you need to chair meetings, you need to do H&I. So I did H&I, did West Care for like 3 years. And during this time, what happened was, I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. I say that because I didn't hear that word for like 3 years in the AA. You know, I heard about dry drunks and other things, but I hadn't heard of untreated alcoholism. So, that untreated alcoholism started driving me further and further away from the group that I was in, my home group. And it got to the point where every time I went to the meeting, I was thinking they're a bunch of liars or a bunch of cons. I was picking fights and arguments. I was looking for a way to get out of AA and my commitments because I thought one more time I'm involved in something that's not working for me, you know. And what happened was the idea came to me that I'm done with AA. I'm going to leave here. And I was right back at a place where I was before I got locked up, which was where I was at a point where I thought, I don't care if I hit that telephone pole head on. I don't care if I go off into a ditch. I don't care if I hit the car coming at me. I can't live the way I'm living anymore, with it or without it. My life is too unbearable, you know. I went through a divorce. My kids hated me. I mean, they would just as soon cross the street and spit at me rather than even to wave at me or to acknowledge me. They hated me. So doing all this stuff, I was going to meetings 7 days a week. I was going sometimes two times a day, all the commitments I could. And all it did was drive me further away from AA because I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. And I didn't know how to treat it. And I remember talking to a few people, and I started breaking the book out myself, and I asked a few people about the recovered, and they said, yeah, that's not really what it means. You know, you can never be recovered in AA. If you think so, then you're fooling yourself. You're always going to be recovering. So to me, what I heard was, you're always going to be suffering. You're never going to get well. And I thought, what's the point of me even being here? I thought this was all about me getting something out of it. So if I can't be recovered, if I'm always going to be suffering and I'm never going to be recovered, what am I doing here? And it started driving me further away. And there was this guy that used to come in and speak, and he would he would crack the book and he would quote from it and he would talk about it. And I asked a few people, who's this guy? He's a book thumper. You want to stay away from him. He's got that book memorized. And, you know, I said, okay. And when he would talk, see, I was with the masses, you know. I was like the little sheep following the other sheep, you know. And when he would say something and I would question it, they would say, just leave that alone. He's just, you know, looking for a cross to stand on and this and that, you know. And the guy would intimidate me. He would talk about recovery, being recovered, state of mind, spirituality, these 11 steps. And it just intimidated me because I thought, the guy's talking about something and it's hitting me here. I don't know what to do with it besides turn away from it because I'm scared. So when I made that decision, I think I'm out of AA. What happened for me was this gal said, hey, I'm going to meet with this guy and there's three or four of us, we're going to go through the book. Are you interested? And I just kind of started trying to get it by myself and I go, yeah, sure, I'd be game for that. She goes, yeah, we're all going to meet this Sunday. Are you sure you want to go? And I was like, yeah. So I showed up at the Starbucks. Nobody else showed up except for this one guy, the guy that I didn't like and that I didn't want to be around. And I'm thinking, oh, crap, okay, here we go. So I sit down, and I'm like, where's everybody else? And he goes, nobody else showed but you. And I go, oh, okay, that was good seeing you, man. I'll talk to you later. And he goes, whoa, where are you going? And I said, well, I'm out of here. I guess nobody's showing up. And he goes, it seemed important enough to you about your recovery that you showed up here. What's it matter if they showed up or not? And I go, well, I thought we were going to do a book study. And he goes, well, we can still go through the book. He goes, why'd you show up here? I go, well, I thought we were going to have a book study. And he goes, no, why did you So why'd you even want to do the book study? And I thought, just be honest with you. And I laid it out, you know. But I'm tired. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of that. I'm tired of people pushing my button, pushing my button. I could be sitting in a meeting. Somebody could say something. I could look down at them, and they could just glance at me, and I'm thinking, what? You know? I mean, I'm just so suffering. I said, I'm tired of that. All my life it's been that way, you know? And she explained to me about untreated alcoholism. And said, maybe you're suffering from untreated alcoholism. And I was like, well, I've already gone through steps, dude, you know, and I've been told this and that. And he goes, have you ever read the big book? Yeah, I've gone and gone through it myself a little bit. Has anybody ever taken you through it? Well, no. He goes, well, how about you and I sit down and we go through this book and we see how things happen? And well, you know what? I've already made up my mind, and I did right there at that time. I'm done. You know, and I think I'm out of here. And in the back of my mind, it's kind of playing out that, you know what, you'll leave here tonight, maybe you'll get drunk, maybe you'll do the other stuff, whatever it is, but tonight maybe will be your last night, you'll check out, and you'll be done with this stuff. But the way the guy talked to me, it hit me. And I told him, I go, you know what, dude? I go, unless you can absolutely guarantee me, little man's going to fall. Unless you can absolutely guarantee me that people aren't going to be able to push my buttons and I'm not going to feel this way, I'm done. And he goes, I can tell you that if we sit down and we go through this book as the book is outlined and we follow the directions as the book talks about, that it will treat your untreated alcoholism and you can be a recovered alcoholic and you will have the freedom that the book talks about. I kind of didn't believe him, but the way everything was going, weighed down on me. I said, okay, let's give it a shot. I thought, I'm going to prove this guy wrong. It ain't going to work. And I go, so when do you want me to call you? And he goes, whenever you want. I go, well, what do you mean? And he goes, whenever you want. And I go, well, my last sponsor told me to call him to do this and do this and to check in before I made any decision. And he goes, I'm not God. He goes, my role as your sponsor is to get you hooked up to God so that you can ask God, and God can give you the directions. I'm not the one to give you directions. I can take you through the book and show you what's been shown to me, but my job is to get you hooked up to God, to rely on Him, not to rely on me, because I'm not God. And the book says that, you know, humans have failed us. Oops. Sorry. I'm beyond human will, beyond human aid, you know. And the stuff the guy was saying, all of a sudden now I'm getting blown away. I'm like, really? And then he popped a thing on me about maybe it was God that came in between me and alcohol that last time. It wasn't because I got arrested by the sheriffs, and it wasn't because I did that time, and why hadn't I drank since I've gotten out, you know? And all these things he started to share with me started to come to play. Even with the 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I was real big on that. I keep doing this. And it was pointed out to me that, you know, in that when you're telling yourself that you can do it for 5 minutes and you can do it for 10 minutes, and then if you can pull that off, you can pull it off for a day. The whole last 2 years, 3 years, you've been saying that. Where has God been involved in that? And I was like, well, what do you mean? He was like, you've been relying on self. God hasn't been involved at all, you know? So that whole thing about you doing that, if you can pull that off on your own, that's great. You know, maybe you don't need to be here. Maybe you're not an alcoholic, you know? And I was like, well, okay. And to tell you the truth, I don't know what it is to be an alcoholic, because nobody ever told me that I suffered from a threefold disease. They always told me you're an alcoholic, or they told me, just tell them you're an alcoholic and raise your hand, you know? And but nobody ever qualified me like it does in the book here. Nobody ever set me down here on page 44 where it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Nobody in 3 years had ever asked me that. The entire time I did an AA. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take. Nobody had ever told me that before or put these things to me. So for the first time, here's somebody qualifying me as an alcoholic, and I'm starting to understand the illness of alcoholism. And I thought, oh, this is great. I'm on the road. I got it going. And he goes, oh, no, now we got to go back to the beginning here, and we got to start, you know. But before we did that, you know, he outlined the contract between the sponsor and the sponsee, you know. And then we started going through the steps, and I was like, man, there's a lot of grieving going on here, you know. And he was like, well, do you think that you, that God can keep you sober until we get through this? I'm like, I don't know. And he goes, what's kept you sober so far? I don't know. I kind of believe it was me, you know. And he really started to get me through and clear on this ideal that it was God. It wasn't me, you know. So I started going through the book, and I started seeing what the book had to offer. I read the doctor's opinion. I read Bill's story. When I read Bill's story before, I thought, I can't relate to him. He played golf. He did this. He was a stockbroker. But then when I went through with him, page by page, paragraph by paragraph, I started to see the progression of alcoholism in Bill's story that I had never seen before. And when I saw this progression in Bill's story, I thought, I can relate to that. I can remember when I was younger and I was drinking, and alcohol gave me better thoughts and it made me more creative because I used to do artwork. And I remember telling my wife, it's okay, things will be all right. And I remember going to medical school over in San Luis Obispo. I was trying to be an x-ray tech, and I was doing a medical assistant, and I was drinking like crazy. And the doctor would say, you know, do you think maybe you got a problem? Because I was reaching. And I was like, who the hell are you to even question what I do in my life, you know? But as I started going through this with him, I was like, when are we going to get through the first step? Man, we've been reading this thing quite a bit. And he was like, you know, I came to realize there's more on the first step, because the first step is so important. You know, a lot of people think you just got to admit that you're powerless over alcohol. Well, I said, well, I admit I'm powerless over alcohol, but I didn't understand what it meant to be powerless. See, for the first time, I was being shown all these things throughout the book. What is it to be powerless over alcohol? Yeah, it's just a blank statement that I said over and over in the beginning. I'm powerless over alcohol. What does that mean? It means I can't drink. Okay, but what else does it mean? I don't know. Well, any ideal thought or belief that I can use something to keep me separated from alcohol is me telling myself I have power over alcoholism. If I believe that me staying away from people, places, and things can stop me from drinking, essentially, I have power over my alcoholism. If I believe that by just going to meetings and talking with my sponsor every day, these things are going to keep me sober, then I believe I have power over my alcoholism. These ideals are what caused me to fight so much, and why I suffered so much in the beginning too, because I fought ideals and I fought things, and it wasn't until I completely surrendered to the ideal that there is nothing I can do to prevent myself from drinking. And the more he took me through that first step, the more my desperation grew, because I started thinking, I could drink at any minute. And he goes, yeah, you could. You know, and that's what this is all about, you know, because you've been relying on a lot of ideals about self. And I really started to see that if it wasn't for the grace of God, I would have drank. That doesn't mean that, here's the other thing, I used to sit in meetings, and I used to see people come in and go out, and the guy next to me would say, if not for the grace of God, that would be us. And I was like, wow. And then it was pointed out to me, do you think God loves you more than he loves that guy? Because that's what I was telling myself. You know, if not for God's grace, he loves me more than he loves that guy. The difference was that what was going on between him was between him and God. He was on his own path just like I was on my path. And at some point, you know, I was ready to surrender like I did. And God put somebody in my life to introduce me to AA for the first time. Things started to happen. I started going through the first step. I started to read these things in the doctor's opinion, where it talks about there are different types of alcoholics, and hard to define one by the personality traits they have. I see that all the time in AA. And the book says we can't define an alcoholic by the way he acts. The only way we can define an alcoholic is by what happens to him once he puts alcohol into his system. So I've seen people go out time and time again because they think, I'm not an alcoholic because I didn't drink like him. I didn't drink 24/7, and I didn't drink that much, so I'm not an alcoholic. I didn't go to jail. I didn't go to prison. I didn't get a divorce. I didn't lose my family. None of these things happened to me, so I'm not an alcoholic. And that's the main thing you hear in a lot of meetings, is all these things happened. None of those things have anything to do with me being an alcoholic. The book points out time and time again, what makes it clear to me that I'm an alcoholic is what happens when I take the first drink. And it's the stuff I just talked about. Once I take that first drink, the phenomenon of craving kicks in. Oh, the physical. You know? And what drives me to take that first drink is the obsession. And I used to think the reason I used to think it was the craving is why I kept drinking. It was defined to me that the craving is the obsession, and when it's fed, when you take that first drink, and then it's off and running. And what creates that whole thing is the spiritual malady, the threefold disease, mind, body, and spirit. Nobody's ever shared that with me. 3.5 years I'm sitting in AA, and I've never had that shared with me or talked about. So while it's being shared with me, he's taking me through. We're going through more. I started to see things that the doctor's opinion talked about. I started to see Bill's story. We got into weed gnostics, more about alcoholism. And I was just being blown away. And what I found was where I didn't want to call him in the beginning, I was calling him now like 2-3 times a week, just checking in and, hey, what's up? You know, I read this in the book and I was talking to him about it and we were talking back and forth. And the book talks about a friendship growing. And I didn't have any idea what could happen, but despite my belief, it was happening with somebody that I didn't really want to know in the first place, you know. And he wasn't ruling my life. He wasn't playing God, you know. I mean, he was being open and honest, and whenever I would ask something, he'd say, what's the book say? And we'd go into the book and we'd talk about it. And at that time, too, I was real big on like 12 and 12, and I'm not knocking it. There's some good stuff in there. But the big book is the only book that gives you clear-cut directions and a precise plan of action. The 12 and 12 only offers you his opinion. This is the only book that is the textbook. There's no other book in AA that's the textbook. This is our book of recovery as outlined. That's why they put this book together. It was a bunch of recovered alcoholics that said, we've been doing this long enough. Let's put our experience together. We can put it in print so that maybe the people that we can't sit with here tonight, maybe we can ship it off to them and they can read it and share in our experience and maybe they can get what we got. So I'm one of those people now. When I read that we, you know, that's me in there too. So I started going through, and early on in AA, the thing, you know, I had a problem with God, and people told me just choose God, whatever you want to be, and make him, and just move on, get on with it, get through the steps. And I thought, well, that's a crazy ideal. Let's try it. So I thought, this is the way I want God. This is how I want God. I don't want to be angry at me. I want to be loving. I want to be kind. I don't want him to be disciplining because I've had that enough in my life. I want this. I want that. And when I started having problems with that, people said, change it. Make it whatever you want. That's the ideal. That's what's great about this. And all of a sudden, I found myself going, if I can change the ideal of who God is in my life, ain't I playing God? If I can tell God who I want God to be, what kind of God is that? That's not really a God. If I can tell him, okay, listen up. Today, I want you to be like this. And if you don't act this way with me, you're out of here. And I'll have a new one tomorrow. That's me playing God. That's me putting God in a box, and I'm not really clear what's going on. I'm still stuck in self. That started to become clear. And all of a sudden, you know, revelation started happening. I did the bedevilment exercise on 52. I did the four absolutes. And the book talks about what we suffered from on page 52. So I seen how I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. In the book, it talks about the illness, and I got clear on that in the first step. I seen I had no defense from God. The second step was me coming to believe in God, being restored to sanity. How am I going to get that? What does that mean? I thought being restored to sanity is just not doing the same thing over. What happened was, when I did these exercises, I did these elements, and the first one, well, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our kingdom problems to the same readiness to change our point of view. This is God that's going to change my point of view, not you or my sponsor or anybody else. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were afraid of misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see these worlds as lunar flight or getting to Mars today? So I did that exercise and I asked God, show me the problems. Show me the bedevilments, the problems I'm having in the relationships with all these things. Show me my ideals that I've used to solve these. And I did all this, and you know what I was doing was lining up this intuitive thought from God. For the first time, I'm sitting quietly and I'm asking God these questions and I'm listening. I'm trying to get this intuitive thought, this direction from God. And things started coming off my pen. I'm thinking, oh, where'd that come from? Well, that's okay. And my sponsor told me, don't doubt it, don't judge it, just write it when it comes to you, because you're asking God to show you the truth. So it may seem like a lie to you, but God is showing you your truth whether you know it or not. So I started writing that stuff out, and then I went back and I asked God to show me his ideal of a solution. So when I did that, like day and night, from what I had to what he showed me and what God was showing me, the vision he outlined was just like, are you kidding me? Really? This stuff's going to happen? What I got was a glimpse through the keyhole of what my life could be like if I progressed through the rest of the steps, and how I could be free, free of fear, free of unhappiness, free of this misery, feelings of uselessness. Looking through that keyhole and seeing that stuff, because I got it on paper, God's given me the vision. Here's what you can have, boys, if you're willing to turn your life and your will over to me and follow the direction and be the agent that I would have you be. Let me be your principal, let me be your director, and you follow my will. So, okay, I'm willing to do this because I've got a clear understanding today of who God is in my life. This conception that I have of God isn't a conception that I've made up. It's a conception that God has given me. My conception, God has given me. So I'm trusting, I do the prayer, I turn my life over, I move into my four steps, and I start writing it out, and he started showing me, I go, oh, this doesn't like what I did the first time. He goes, well, that's all right, we're going to do it this way. The first time I did it, I'm not knocking the way I did it, something about that helped me. I'm not knocking because I did get through it. There were some things that were addressed. And when I made that next list of resentments towards people, principles, institutions, some of the people that were on that first list didn't pop up on that second list. So I know that God, in his infinite way, had relieved me somehow some of these things. And when I put that second list together, my sponsor goes, well, was there anybody that didn't, that from the first list that showed up on there? And I go, phew. And he goes, so that shows you that even though you weren't in this, that God was walking with you and protecting you and caring for you. You know, I was like, okay. So, I did my inventory, and come to find out that all that third column is nothing but lies I've been living my life on. You know, I did my fourth column. I saw the selfishness where I was holding on to ideals, what I wanted from you, self-seeking. I saw the delusion. I just want to be a part of AA. That's the delusion. What's the real truth? I don't want to die in AA alone. I started getting these things. And for the first time, this rock on my back, this bag of rocks, I'm seeing the truth about my life. And I got a vision of that back then. And as I'm doing this work, I'm really starting to see the truth. And I'm going to meetings, and this one guy's doing the finger at me, and he's telling me stuff. And I'm like, well, that's cool. And I left that meeting, and I thought, holy crap, what happened? Because I would have been down his throat and doing stuff, and for the first time I'm thinking, that stuff rolled off me like, water on a duck's back, What's going on? And I shared with my sponsor, and he goes, maybe this, what the promises are in the book is starting to happen for you, I did my fifth step with him. This time, though, I laid everything out. I didn't hold anything back. All the terrible stuff that I thought, I don't want to put down on paper, there's no need for it. I was convinced that if I wanted to be free, I had to get it all out. I did that, and then I went through, and he told me, well, I did the sex inventory, when I did the sex inventory this time, it was different because I didn't ask where did I cause betrayal, jealousy, bitterness, all these things. And when I just marked yes or no. This time, how did I cause jealousy? How did I cause betrayal? I got into it because the book talks about we need to get to the root of the problem. What I've done before is I just cut the tree clean off at the top and it sprouted up. I need to get to the root of the problem, get this stuff out so that this stuff ain't sprouting up like it was before. So instead of me just marking yes or no, how free do I want to get? How willing am I to go in depth into these steps and get clear on what's going on in my life? So I start getting in depth. I start writing this stuff out. Before I know it, I got to pray in. I got to pray out because some of this stuff I'm writing about, I'm thinking, really? I got a part in this. But everything I wrote, I had a part in, I thought. And I started to see for the first time where some of the women, before when I wrote about it, it was always about sex. And this time I realized it's not even about sex. That same inventory I did on the sexual inventory, I could do that with anybody in my life. It doesn't have to be with the woman where I cause bitterness, jealousy, or arouse, all these things. It could be with anybody in my life. But I went through that, and I wrote all those things out, and then I was told, ask God what you could have done differently with each one. So I did that, I wrote them all out, and I was told, wherever they repeat, pull them off and just keep the one and keep moving through the list. So I did that, and by the time I was done with that list, I had this page full of all these things I could have done. And he goes, do you know what you have? And I said, what? And he goes, you have a right sex ideal with God. This is how a relationship should be built, with God's ideals. Not your ideals, the one you did before, but on these ideals that God's showing you. And I was like, wow, it's incredible. Because now, I had all this stuff laid out. And I've used that. I don't go into a relationship trying to be somebody that I'm not. I don't lie about what I am. You know, I don't, if I've got something on my mind, I share it. I don't like, well, man, I ain't going to talk about that stuff with her or anything. I lay it out. I'm not selfish. I don't keep what's bothering me to myself. I lay it out. That's what it is to be in a relationship, you know. And I started to get into relationships, and through that right ideal that God showed me, right off the bat, I think this is not the relationship for me. So I don't have to go any further and cause harm and misery and depression like I did before, which is what I always did. So anyway, I wrapped that up, and my first sponsor told me, write a list of fears. So I don't want to be a bad father. I read all these fears out, and I got 5 minutes? You can go on for another hour. I wrote them all out, and the fears came because I bracketed them in my thing. And for the first time, I asked God, what would you have instead? So God showed me what I could have instead. I broke them down into four core fears. And I think everybody, I won't get into that because I don't want to tell you what you should have for a fear. I think that's an exercise you guys should all do, come down to. I got my character defects. Where did I get them? From my inventory. Good or bad ideals. I want to be a protector of my sister. That's not a bad ideal. Well, it is if I'm trying to play God in her life. So I had to recognize good or bad. I had to give them to God. Am I willing? Yeah. Good or bad. I want to lose weight. I want to be in shape. It's a good ideal. Why do you want to do that? Maybe so I could be more attractive to the women. There's a motive behind it. There's something going on there, you know. Good or bad, am I willing to give them all to God? Yeah, I am. I do the 7-step prayer. I ask God, give me strength and bidding to do your will. I've got this list that I've already made. I put that list together, and I'm one that believes that I shouldn't pick the easiest, do the hardest. God gave me a list. He put it in order, so why don't I follow that order and just start going off of it? It's simple. So I'm asking for strength and direction because I'm about to go out and do something that I could never do before. And the first time I started making amends, it was all about me. This time, I recognized it wasn't about me because I got clear on my fifth step. I got free. You know, I laid all that stuff out. Now, what I'm doing by doing the amends is I'm giving the person the ability, the chance to be free. You know, I'm asking them. There's like 12 steps to making an amends that I was showing through the book. You know, and for the first time, it was all about them. And the hardest part, you know, was like, is there anything that you need to tell me? How I affected you or what I did that I've left out or that you feel you need to tell me? And boy, some people really had a lot to tell me, you know. But it was good. They were all good. There were financial amends. Let me put it this way. I've gone through the first set of amends that I put on the list. I've done them all. I did them all. The book says that by doing all the amends, we get this spiritual experience. I did financial. I did the relationship amends. I did amends to my kids. The book says that we get a personal experience. Something happens that's great by doing this. And I don't want to be cheated, so I did mine. I got through them. There was a couple that I thought I'd never be able to do until I trusted God, and then I did them. But the book talks about by doing these things, new structures being built in our life. And it's not just a new structure being built in AA. The book talks about in all of our affairs. These things I'm doing are so I can help the suffering alcoholic, but they're so I can build these new structures that were destroyed by my alcoholism, new relationships with my kids. My kids today, we're best friends. Tomorrow, I'm going to be with my daughter. She's going to be delivering a baby, and that'll be my third grandchild. And then last night, my granddaughter told me, Mommy's got another baby in her belly growing. And I was like, oh, I can't believe how my family's grown from where I was alone. And it's not because of me, but it's because of what God has done in my life. So making these amends, it propels me into the 10th step. Now I've got this spiritual plateau that I'm walking hand-in-hand with God throughout my day, and He's tapping me on the shoulder saying, you might want to address that. And if I get angry and I deal with it, then maybe I might want to call somebody or help somebody else. And it doesn't have to be an alcoholic. It could be somebody else in my office that I've turned to get help in all of our affairs. I go to bed at night, or I get home at night, I retire, I do my 11th step. I write this list out. I ask God, was I in fear? Was, you know, I go through the whole thing. And it's a way for me to kind of get clear and be free of these things. I don't believe in the one day at a time. To me, that says that it kind of pulls it back into that God can't. I believe the book talks about being sober forever and forever. I believe that God's going to keep me sober today, tonight, tomorrow, the next day, and the hereafter. Forever. To give anything less is to discredit God. In the directions of the 11th step, it doesn't say just for today. It says we start planning directions for the next day. For the next day. So He's already telling me that by doing this, I got to ask for directions. Is there any corrections or anything that I have to do so I can make those the next day? So if I'm just living for today, why would I be asking what I'm doing tomorrow? The book says either He is or He isn't. What's it going to be? You know, it's in His time or my time. And that was hard for me to swallow at first. But I really believe that today because I believe in God in my life today. A God that was different from what I was raised on. All the prejudice ideals I had towards God been set aside. God came into my life and showed me who He is. So it's a great thing. By doing these things, doing the 11th step, it keeps me spiritually fit. I will not stand here and tell you that I do an 11th step every night. I'm not going to lie and say that. I'm human. I'm an alcoholic. Things happen. There are times that I go a week. I've gone even 2 weeks. I've gone even 3 weeks. You know what happens? The desperation builds on me so much. Today, for me to be separate from God is hell. I used to think hell was all this kind of stuff, but today, for me to be separate from God and to be living on my own will, that's me being in hell. And the more that I stop the spiritual conditioning, the more I live in hell. And it gets to the point, like in the story they talk about in the book, even if you wanted to, you couldn't. And the times that things happen with me like that, I couldn't if I wanted to. God is such a part of my life, He's so ingrained in me that He's protecting me day and night, whether I know it or not, and He's moving me forward. He puts people in my life that I can help, alcoholic or non-alcoholic. I take people through the book the same way I did. I do the 12 step. I lay the book out. We go through it just like I did. I left that one home group meeting and I went to another one where I got clear on this stuff, and I even started my own meeting. And I don't want to say it like I started my own meeting, but God gave direction, and in the vision for us, the book talks about a fellowship growing around us, growing up around us that we cherish, that we want. I came out here to the Visalia Primary Purpose Group, and I was looking for an ideal for a meeting, and when I heard this format they had a statement, they had a question for every statement in the book, and I came to this for a couple months. I thought, this is great. So I started the Fresno Primary Purpose Group, myself and Rick, a buddy of mine, and we've been doing that now for the last couple of years. And it's not us that keeps the meeting going, but it's God. God in everything. You know, I got to recognize every day on a daily basis that I'm just the agent. If not for God, it wouldn't be possible. My sponsor asked me a year and a half ago, do you think you still have a problem with alcoholism? And I said, no, I'm recovered. And he goes, let me tell you, you by yourself still have a problem with alcoholism, even though you're recovered. Because if you think that you don't have a problem, where is God involved in that? I have to remember that me, I'm an alcoholic, and I have a problem with alcoholism. And my only defense is God. The only thing between me and my alcoholism. The last thing I want to say, I guess I'm running over, is, you know, I'm sure there are people out there that have been through what I've been through, that have shared the feelings, the emotions, the hard times, all that stuff. And I can tell you, just like you told me that night, I can guarantee you, if you follow the directions in this book, if you search diligently and you're honest with yourself, your life can change and you can be a recovered alcoholic. Let me ask you this. Threefold disease, phenomenon of craving. All these people that walked up here tonight, I've heard everything from 3 days to 130 days. So if you're not suffering from the phenomenon of craving, isn't that one part of the disease that you're already recovered from? There's two more parts. How are we going to lick the obsession? How am I going to lick that? Because I got to treat the spiritual malady. And that's what the rest of this program is all about. So find somebody who's gone through the book. You'll find God. Maybe you've already found God. I'm all for it, you know. Get a book, read it. Read it with some, it works even better when you read it with somebody else and you start breaking it down. And with that, I just want to thank God. I want to thank you guys for letting me be part of this, and I'll shut up. Thanks.